Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic classroom lectures in business and economics recorded for podcast. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2010. Lecture 11, delivered on February 23, 2010. The title of this lecture is Time Value of Money.
Today, Time Value of Money. I'm going to start this by asking a simple question of you, sir. I could give you $100 today, or I could give you $100 exactly 1 year from today. It's your choice.
Today.
Today? Would you? Today? Today? Today. So we have a relatively uniform agreement. Now is preferred to later. Because you see, in a year you might be dead. Or you might have decided that you don't want money in a year and you've gone off to live in a Hare Krishna commune. You might have been sucked into an alien ship in a year and you have been taken to a planet where you breed with blue people that are very tall and have pointy ears and talk about, hey, well, see, now is preferred to later. More is preferred to less. Much is preferred to little. Joy is preferred to pain. For most people, I've met a few, you know, really creepy ass, you know, you stay away from those people. You see, this is the way it is. We choose more. We choose now. And in fact, by our human nature, we construct numerical representations of our desire for now rather than later, for more instead of for less. We actually, in finance, there is an entire mathematical system that derives from our desire for more now rather than less later, or even the same later. You remember dark in your past, going back to those early days when you were taking math, somewhere you learned about unit conversions, centimeters to inches, 2.54 centimeters equals 1 inch, yards to feet, one yard equals 3 feet, and quarts to gallons, 4 quarts equals 1 gallon. What I'm going to show you here is nothing but a unit conversion. It's a little more complicated than the ones you might have learned in elementary school or high school. Well, okay, high school if you came from Decatur. But it's the same idea. It is a way of converting the future dollars to now dollars. You see, because $100 is meaningless unless you give it units. I'm going to show you what I mean by this. Let me show you something here. Okay. 12. 98. Hang on. 16. You think, what the hell? What am I talking about? I didn't give any units to it. You see, so there's the important thing, is that always we need to have units involved when we're talking about numbers. But also in that same regard, in that same vein, when I talk about dollars, that's not enough. You're going to get $5,000. Okay? See, that shouldn't mean a whole lot to you. You know, you might say, oh, goody, goody. When you're 100. Oh, bummer. Bogus. $86,000. But you see, it doesn't really mean anything unless I tell you when it's going to occur. Then it begins to have some meaning to you. Dollars isn't enough. We have to know the timing of the money. And that's crucial. You see, because if I say, let's say, $5,000 to him, it's going to mean a whole lot more if that $5,000 is coming when he walks out the door than when he's headed for the dirt nap when he's dead. Okay? I got a life insurance policy. See, you know, I don't give a rat's ass about it. Because unfortunately, whatever that money comes to me, I'm pushing up daisies. You see. So that's the context of what we're doing here. Is it's not enough to say a number. In finance, it's not enough to say dollars. In finance, we also have to include when the dollars occur. And if they don't occur now will be our pivot. If they don't occur now, then we have to have a unit conversion that converts future dollars to now dollars. That's all these formulas I'm going to give you are, is nothing but unit conversions that convert dollars in the future to dollars now. As I said, the conversion is a little bit more complicated than it is in unit conversions you've done before. Because in unit conversions you did before, it was like a static thing. It was always 2.54 centimeters equals 1 inch, for example. But in finance, it will matter, first of all, when the future dollars occur. How many years out, how many months out, whatever. And also there will be another parameter that affects the unit conversion we use. And that will be the discount rate. The discount rate that we use will depend upon the risk of the cash flow. The discount rate can also depend upon a few other things, according to some theoreticians. But primarily, the discount rate that we use to discount cash flows will depend upon the risk of the cash flow occurring. If it is a highly certain cash flow, the discount rate we use will be very low. If it is a very risky prospect, then that discount rate will be high. Which means that those dollars in the future will be worth very little now if there's not much chance that we get them. Remember when I told you that I was going to give you $100 in a year, maybe? Don't trust me. My ass will lie to you. So you might say, well, that's worth $10 now. But if Bill Gates comes up to you and says, I will give you $100 in a year, my child, you can probably take that to the bank. You see, money that is not very likely to occur in the future isn't worth much now. So we would expect that when we discount it from the future to the present, we would want something that would really cut its value down now. Now here's the thing, though. There's going to be a base. And I went through this. Remember when I talked about the risk structure of interest rates? I want you to remember that for the exam, by the way. I'm going to ask you about risk structure of interest rates. Don't give me some flowery, generalized concept. You tell me what comprises an interest rate. It is the sum of a risk-free rate and a set of risk premia, default, maturity, and illiquidity. But at the heart of every interest rate, remember what I said, and I've said it in two different contexts, both with structure of interest rate and also with capital asset pricing model. Every interest rate you will see must have at least oh, did you hear that? Buy her cookies after the risk-free rate. Every interest rate must give you the risk-free rate. Now, here's the $64,000 question. Do you remember what the risk-free rate was? We proxy it by a short-term government T-bill. But do you remember what I said the risk-free rate is all about, the real rate of return plus the expected inflation premium. What do we mean by the real rate of return? Do you remember that part?
Yeah, you've done your job for the day. Madam, do you remember? Maybe later. Call me later.
The opportunity cost of foregone consumption. Would you give me $50? I'm good for it. I'll give it back to you here. I'm actually a very wealthy person. I wear this professorial disguise, but I'm actually a superhero. But I pass through walls, so I can go into a bank and just get what I want. I didn't say I'm a good superhero, but
you won't, will you?
Because you could use that for yourself. You could buy candy. You could buy a meal. You could buy a lot of things. You see, every interest rate embeds a core of what you're giving up at the heart of it. The opportunity cost of foregone consumption. Therefore, when I talk about any discounting of a cash flow, there's going to be some discounting because you are giving up at least consumption you could have done with the money now. So $100 a year from now isn't it worth as much as $100 now, no matter how sure you are of that $100 in a year, because that interest rate, or rather that money in $100 in a year, if you had it now, you could use it to buy a cheeseburger. Yes, we can have cheeseburgers. Okay? Now, this sounds like I'm kind of spinning around here, but I'm motivating the idea that if I have a timeline and I've got, let's say, 1 year, year one here, and year zero here. If I were to say to you, I've got $100 that is going to occur in 1 year, in order for me to know what that is the same as now, I must discount it back to the present. And it will decline in value as it comes back to the now. And at the same time, $100 2 years from now would decline in its value now proportionately more. Well, actually, disproportionately more. Here's the deal. It's actually a simple formula. You've probably seen it before. The present value of a cash flow n years out is equal to its future value times 1 plus the discount rate on that cash flow to the negative nth power. And I'm going to put a little sub n on the future value to represent that it came n years out. Now, let me caution something here. I usually write interest rates in years. And if I want to talk about some period other than a year, I will divide by the number of periods that is in a year. So if I were to say to you, semi-annually, I've got semi-annual compounding of my interest, what would I have to divide the annual interest rate by? 2. But I would also have to multiply the N by 2. So if I had 10 years semi-annually, that's 20 semi-annual periods. But the interest rate is compounding, so I 2 times a year, so I'd have to divide the interest rate by 2. And I'm going to write a little bit of a formula that's not in the book here in just a moment. Let's try a couple more here. What about quarterly? What would I divide the annual interest rate by? I don't mean to be trivial here, but I want to make absolutely sure we are okay on this. Because I could throw in it. 4. And then I would also multiply the N by 4 because there would be 4 quarters in every year that I was counting. What about biweekly? Say it. 104.
26, bi-weekly. Yes. could there be a semi-week? I guess maybe. Okay, semi-annual. That would be the two. How about I think I already went through this. Yearly. What would I divide the R by? Yes, I would. I was just testing you there. Okay, how about this one? Daily. What would I divide the R by? What would I, 360. What would I multiply the N by? 365. That's right. It's that stupid. And yes, they do it all by 365 now, except for me, because I'm an old bastard. We used to do it, we divided the R by 360, but we multiplied the N by 365. Why? I never asked, because my professors would have hit me across the head back in those days. You don't ask about things like that. God told us to do it that way. Oh, okay. But I'm actually quite serious. The old way, and until I am hit by lightning, we'll do it the old way, and here is you divide by 360 for the interest rate, you multiply by 365 for the exponent. Now, there's actually a reason for that. There is actually a reason for it. There are a couple of things that happened. Back after the crash of the stock markets, there was a great deal of reform that went on in the financial community because of legislation passed by Congress. Real tough legislation. For one thing, there could no longer be banks offering ridiculous interest rates. That just couldn't possibly happen. You couldn't do that. There was a uniform law established that said you cannot offer a passbook savings account with an interest bearing more than 5.25% per year. And I'm not sure if 5.25% was what it was at the time that the original restricting legislation was passed, but it came to be 5.25% was the maximum interest rate that could be offered on a passbook savings account. So banks could not compete by just jacking up to unrealistic interest rates, which eventually caused the banks to collapse. But banks faced a real dilemma, because in the market competition, they were bumping up against all 5.25%, and it could very well be that investors could go to other securities that were relatively safe and get better than 5.25%. So the banks were at a disadvantage with this kind of a price ceiling on them. So here's what they did. Watch, I'm going to show you something. Go learn effective interest rate. Okay, now, I want you to take 1 plus 0.0525 to the first power minus 1, and then multiply it by 100% to turn it back into a percent. Do that for me, please. Just tell me what you get when you get do that. 5 point what? 2, 5. Is that what you get? I want you to make sure you do this, because I can ask this on an exam. What I'm doing is teaching you how to find an effective yield. This is one of the classic questions on a first exam, is finding an effective yield. Here's your chance on a live fire. What do you say? Well, spank me, Mohammed. It's 5.25%. To which the intellectual among you would respond, duh. But now I want you to do it again with semi-annual compounding. Do the same thing again, except 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 2 to the second power, all minus 1 times 100%. Tell me what you get when you do that. Talk to me. And make sure you can do these formulas. That's one of the reasons I'm doing this, is to
give you the chance to get it right here with your happy uncle. What do you say? And always remember, 2 decimal places as a percentage. 5.32. Now let's do it quarterly. One quantity, 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4, all to the fourth power. 4 compoundings a year. So there would be 4 quarters in 1 year. Remember, we're doing this for just a year. So we find annual times 100%. What do you get? 5.35. Now let's just do it daily just to find some closure with this silly exercise. Quantity 1 plus 0.0525 over 360, all to the 365th power, minus 1, and then times it by 100%. Are you getting the hang of finding an effective yield? See, what we're essentially doing is turning a compounding more than once a year into its effective annual rate. So I wouldn't have to do the compounding thing. What do you get if it's daily compounding? 5.46. Now, I want you to tell me something here. What do you notice is happening as I increase the number of compoundings per year? What's happening to the effective yield? Well, isn't that interesting? A way around a price ceiling. You see it? It's a way around a price ceiling. Essentially, by compounding, there's no rule against compoundings more than once a year. So even though we are saying the interest rate is 5.25%, by compounding more than once a year, you are creating the effect of a higher annual rate. You're creating the effect of a higher annual rate. Do you see the trick? It actually works. You can have, the law could say, you will not charge what you will not, you cannot pay more than 5.25%. But if I increase the number of compoundings per year, the effective annual rate is going up. Now, here's the last part of the trick. First of all, historically, 360 is easier to divide by than 365. That's the origins of 360. Let no one tell you differently. However, what would happen if I wanted to offer the best rate to my customers? I've gotten to the point where I'm offering daily compounding, which would give my customers a better deal, a 360 or a 365 in the denominator. Yeah, there you go. 365 in the numerator makes the exponent more powerful. 360 in the denominator does not reduce the 0.0525 as much as 365 would. It's a small nuance, but that's how it worked. You get the idea? It's essentially just little tricks and twists, and that's why I still bitch to this day, 360 in the denominator, 365 in the numerator. It gives the customer the best deal. It gives them an edge. And if you got two banks, one's doing has computer programs doing 360, the other's doing 365, the 360 is going to give the customer a little better deal. That's all it is. That's the effective annual yield formula. Now, take that off the board here for just a moment, and let me get back to what I was doing over here. So, let's try one. Just a straight up, find the present value of $500 that will occur in 2 years. No, I'm sorry, occur in 5 years if the discount rate on the cash is 8.4%. Now, You can actually have these financial functions on your calculator, regardless of what calculator you have, do this problem. Honestly, though, I mean, this problem is so straight up with the formula that it probably takes you longer to key it into the formula buttons, into the financial keys, than it would be to just hammer it. Well, I asked for a present value, so the present value is going to be 500 bucks times the quantity 1 plus 0.084 to the negative fifth power. You say, well, what about compounding? Okay, I didn't say anything about compounding, so don't get fancy. I didn't say anything about compounding. If I don't say anything about it, don't ask me, because maybe I forgot, and if you remind me, I'll do something. What say you? What do you get? 334.06? Now, here's where you do reality checks. If you make a mistake with these present and future value problems, your numbers will probably blow up on you. They probably will. So, does this answer make sense? If you had gotten a number bigger than $500, you would have probably known that it was, that technically, your answer was a crock. Okay? In this case, it comes out less than 500. If you had come out with something like $12.35, that would have probably told you that your answer was baloney as well. Where you have landed, and it takes a while to get a feel for it, but really, out 5 years, that's not bad. Now, let me take you on a journey. We're going to take you on a journey here. Who would possibly be right for this? I know what this is going to be about. I'm going to do it this way. You dream of retirement. It's not going to happen. You're what, about 20?
19.
Okay, let's take you out to the age of 69. You want, while you still have a little life in you, while you can still reach for Viagra, you want to have your dream come true. You want a cruise on the Love Boat. Do you remember the Love Boat? Do you know that? Love, exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you. Stop it. Focus. You want to live the dream. You want to have $1 million in the bank when you retire in 40 years. And I, right now, am not just your financial advisor. I am the captain of the Love Boat. You know where the Love Boat's going? To Fantasy Island. Do you remember Fantasy Island? Deep Lane, Harvey Villachez and Ricardo Montalban, late of Khan in Star Trek III, The Wrath of Khan. Whatever. Kids these days. $1 million in 40 years. What do you have to put in the bank now? I'm your financial advisor. I'm going to tell you right now that I can put you into a CD, a long CD. It'll lock in an interest rate. The interest rate it's going to lock in is 6.95%. But you have to hold the money there for 40 years. Your goal is to have $1 million exactly 40 years from now. So what are we going to do? Did I give you the present value or the future value? And that's going to be critical, because you can play this formula either way. You can carry it forward or carry it backward. I gave them the future value. What else do I need for a future for this problem? Obviously, I need to know the present value. So clearly the formula that I've given you is correct, is the correct one. So I want to know, what is the present value of 1,000,000 simoleons times 1 plus 0.0695 over anything? Over 1. God, I didn't tell you anything, so it's 0.0695. To what power? To the negative 40th. Watch that. See, the thing, though, is that it's this part of it, and remember why I said this is actually easy. Once you get the hang of it, your real problem is going to be deciding whether the number you know is the present value or the future value. It can be a little, but this one's clearly, he knows his future target. We want to know what it's going to take now to realize that. What do you get for an answer to this problem? $68,000. What is it? And what? Look at that. Affordable?
I think so. 4 cruise on the Love Boat in 40 years? Sure. You see, actually, this is the beginning of financial planning. It obviously will get more complicated than this, but if you have targets, and when we ask people, well, what do you want to do when you retire? That's the first thing. And then we construct how much money they would need to do what they want to do. And then we begin to craft what has to be done in the interim. Now in terms of money and in a periodic fashion in terms of money. And then we can say, this will get you to your goal. Or at least we hope it will. Of course, obviously, a meteorite could hit and destroy everything, and then we'd be in an apocalyptic world with the crazies and all that. But that's really a basic problem, but it's something I might ask you on an exam. It's just for you to be able to show me that you know something about how time value of money works. Notice, interestingly enough, that looks $68,000 looks like kind of a big amount of money. Eh, it's not too bad, considering it's $1,000,000 you're talking about out there. Now, does that answer make sense? Well, it does, but maybe you wouldn't see that it does. But it should not be a large amount compared to the target. Now, one last thing. Just if anyone would do it, you don't all have to do it. I want you to take 1 plus 0.0695 quantity to the negative 40th for me. What did you get? This thing right here, 0.068, 64 what? See that number right there? That's unit conversion of 40 years out in the future at 6.95% dollars to present dollars. It's exactly like centimeters to inches, except that these unit conversions will hinge upon how many years are out there, compoundings of, and also the interest rate that you're choosing to use. But that's just a conversion factor. 40 years out dollar discounted at 6.95% compounded annually equals 6.8 cents right now. It's a unit conversion. That's all it is. See, I multiplied that unit converter times how much my target was out here, and that converted it into present dollars.
I'm not sure how far that I should push that, but I do want to point out there's nothing actually mysterious about these present value, future value formulas. These 1 plus r to the negative nth and all that, they're nothing but unit converters. Future dollars at given interest rates for given number of years to present dollars. Now, let me give you the other side of the coin here. We can do this the other way. We can actually turn the formula the other way and say, look, the future value n years out is going to be how much we have now times 1 plus r to the positive nth. In other words, we're just dividing both sides by 1 plus r to the negative nth.
Now, this, interestingly enough, traditionally we show, if I were a normal professor, and you all know I am, no, I'm serious, I actually started choking on that. What was that, a tumor coming up? What the hell? Anyway, I would teach you this formula right here first. FV equals PV times 1 plus R to the nth. But realistically in finance, we are much more interested in telescoping money back from the future. So that was the title of a movie too. But so you see, the thing here is that I show you this formula up here, the present value formula first, because that's the one we really use in finance the most, is converting dollars out there back to here, because the here and now gives us great decision-making leverage. You can talk to me about a project that brings in money 2 years from now against a project that brings in money 8 years from now, and I can compare them right here in the present. I convert them both to now dollars, and then it's apples to apples. So that's why in finance, we're interested in that first formula I showed you, PV equals FV times quantity 1 plus R to the negative nth, much more frequently than we are the second formula, which is usually taught right off the bat. That's the one we key on. I don't, though, because unless I'm going into financial planning, even there, I mean, it's... Really, this is the one we use more frequently because we're constantly wanting to know how do we telescope money in the future back to now. Okay, so if I do future value problems, you'll see me not do those quite as frequently as I would do present value kinds of problems, just because we are hinged in finance to getting everything in the here and now so we can compare apples to apples. Once in a while, a problem gets so complicated that it actually works better to take everything out to a future point, sort of like an agreed upon point. And I can caution you here. Problems in time value of money can get so complicated that you can't find your own butt using both hands and a Rand McNally with Google access to the IMAPs. It is that difficult. It can get really complicated. I won't take you that far because I can get so confused that I can't find my own butt using both hands and a Rand McNally with access to Google's IMAPs. But I'll show you, I'll hint at how bad they can get. They can get really nasty. But that's not today's thing. Let me show you something. You have two projects. They're relatively equivalent in risk. So I would probably use the same discount rate. Now remember where I said we usually oftentimes will get our discount rate? There's three places that we can get the discount rate for cash flows. You notice how I've been putting up discount rates for cash flows? Let me tell you the secrets. First of all, you can get them from the capital asset pricing model. That's a good place to get a discount rate for cash flow. Find a beta that's equivalent in risk. Second, you can pull them out of your ass, which is what I did here. Or third, you can essentially take whatever is told to you by someone who is an authority. I've seen that a lot.
And where they get them from, I don't know. But oftentimes, I've seen in the financial management part of a company, there will just be this promulgation. For project analysis, you will use this discount rate. And so the underling analysts will just use that. They don't ask why. They just use that discount rate because that's what we use. So for our purposes right now, I'm just pulling them out of the air. But later, I'll say, let's use CAPM. I'll give you a beta of an equivalent security to these projects risk. Right now, let's look at this. Project 1 and Project 2. And we're going to have, they both are going to cost the same right now to start. We'll leave that part out because if you put that part in and they're different, you get into net present values. Let's just do it this way. And we got our year here. Year 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's say that project 1, $0 comes in, and then in year 1, $100, in year 2, $200, and then year 3, $50. And then year 4, nothing. It dies. $50 is sort of like a salvage value at the end of year 3. Project 2, nothing now. Then $200. And then $100. And then $50. I'm sorry, $25. And then $25. Now, notice that both of these projects add up to $350. But you know what? That is absolutely a useless statement. There's no such thing as a $350 here anywhere. There is no $350. I want to make sure you see that. Do you see that there is no $350 here anywhere, either project? Because I can't add these numbers together. They're not in the same units. They're in different year dollars. I have to convert these to something where they are equivalent. Best thing, now dollars. Best thing is now dollars. Okay? So, here we go. What's a mother to do? Let us discount both of these projects at 7%. That's our discount rate for both projects. So the present value of project 1 is going to be $100 times 1 plus 0.07 to the negative first plus $200 times 1 plus 0.07 to the negative second plus $50 times 1 plus 0.07 to the negative third. That is going to be the present value in now dollars, of project 1. Whatever number comes out of there is a number I can work with. As long as I convert the other project's cash flows into this one. Let's try this. Now, present value of 2. Would be $200 discounted back 1 year at 7% plus $100 discounted back 2 years at 7% plus $25 discounted back 3 years at 7% plus $25 final dollars discounted back 4 years at 7%. I want to make absolutely sure you can get these answers. Then you're done. Which project do you choose and why? As a matter of fact, that's a good question. Which project do you choose? I lost one of my numbers. To the negative? Plus 200
times 1.07 y to the x 2 pos neg plus $50 times 1.07 y to the x 3 pos neg. Now, what do you get for the present value of project 1? I got 309.96. What do you get? 308.96? That's weird. How could I have been off by exactly a dollar? Ah, okay, fine. Fine, I suck at math. 308.96. That's what Project 1 is worth now in terms of future expected cash flows. We now have now dollars. Bring it. What's the next one? As a matter of fact, yeah, that was one I actually lost. Apparently the one that I held on to wasn't right. Plus 200, and then you got 100 plus or times 1.07 y to the x 2 pos neg plus 25 times 1.07 y to the x 3 pos neg plus 25 times 1.07 y to the x 4 pos neg equals, yep, that's what, dollars and cents, is that what you get? Or was my calculator actually, yeah, okay. The second project is worth 313.74, because that one I had earlier, 313.13. But it's 313.74? Okay. Yeah, but anyway, it's up or down. So in this case, you just simply say, you choose project 2, and if I say why, you just say it has a higher present value of future expected cash flows. That's the answer. Don't do nuance on it. Just in finance, we just have yes or no, right or wrong, this one or that one. So that's how we do it here. And this is actually, you've done a fairly sophisticated problem. We have some shortcuts for doing these, and I'll show you the shortcuts on Thursday. But for today, that's all I have for you. I thank you.